p.m. in Zimbabwe on Sunday, June 1st, 2014. You are listening to Studio 7 coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us this Sunday evening from Washington. I'm Sandra Nyaira. Among our top stories this evening, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says the government should revise and reverse its decision to increase healthcare services as the move will hamper access to healthcare by struggling Zimbabweans.
Not been any pay increases since 2009. And when a doctor hikes the fee, it surprises some of us. And also, certainly, some medical societies are failing to operate.
Zimbabwean Nyaradzai Gumbonjanda is named Goodwill Ambassador for the African Union's campaign seeking to end child marriage on the continent.
We support very much that campaign because we find that the problems are not only in other countries. We also have this problem in Zimbabwe, particularly in remote areas which are very much underdeveloped.
And as usual, we give you the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says the government should reverse its decision to increase healthcare services as the move will hamper access to healthcare for most Zimbabweans who are already struggling to make ends meet. The rights group says the new fees are not matched by any increase in income for the general population and will widen the gap between the private and public sector and the health systems. The government effected the changes last Friday, sparking an outcry from most sectors. A visit to a general practitioner now costs $35 from $20, and subsequent consultation for the same illness will be $30, up from $15. A subsequent consultation at a hospital or nursing home per day is now $40 from $20. Gideon Shoko, Deputy Secretary General of Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, tells the reporter Standekile Mhlanga his organization concurs with the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, as most workers do not have insurance and some people are not even employed.
There have not been any pay increases since 2009. And when a doctor hikes the fees, then it surprises some of us. And also, certainly, some medical societies are failing to operate. I can give you an example of a medical society that is in the doldrums because of non-remittance of contributions by the employer. Realmente, one of the best medical societies that we had in the country, it's now in the doldrums. The employer is not remitting the contributions that he is deducting from workers. So I wonder where these doctors expect the ordinary populace of Zimbabwe to get that money which they are hiking.
There are some people with chronic diseases such as kidney failure and cancer. What are the workers doing to cope?
They will not cope. They will not cope. They have signed a death warrant for all these people who are not going to be able to pay, especially the workers. Because the workers, if you look at their conditions of service, they are supposed to go to a private doctor. They are not supposed to go to straight an institution like Impilo or Parinyatwa. They are supposed to go to a private doctor. And the private doctors are the ones that is asked.
That was Gideon Choko, ZCTU Deputy Secretary General, on the line from Bulawayo with Sitandekile Mhlanga. The African Union Commission has launched a historic Africa-wide campaign to end child marriage on the continent. The campaign focuses on policy action and raising continental awareness. Member states would be expected to follow and implement legal frameworks that protect children. Ms. Nyaradzai Gumbonjanda of Zimbabwe was named Goodwill Ambassador for the AU campaign. Ms. Gumbonjanda is currently the General Secretary of the World WYCA. She's a trained human rights lawyer with extensive experience in conflict resolution and mediation, including 20 years' experience on issues of women and children's human rights, with a special focus on crisis countries. Speaking at the launch in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, African Union Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said child marriage cannot be left unaddressed. She said the continent cannot afford to let this tradition go unchallenged. Most of the girls come from poor families and rural areas where they they cannot oppose family and community cultural norms. Monica Mandiki is an independent consultant on women's issues. She applauds the AU for launching the campaign.
We support very much that campaign, because we find that the problems are not only in other countries, we also have this problem in Zimbabwe, particularly in remote areas which are very much underdeveloped. We find that there, you know, the kids don't have much to look forward to. Education pathways, you know, are very low. You find the school may have just one trained teacher, the rest are untrained teachers. Pathways, that's 1 or 2%. So there's nothing to look forward to. They find that in such areas, children just get married very early, 12, 14, you find they already are in marriages. And most of these marriages will even be polygamous marriages. So the child really becomes more like a domestic worker or, you know, that sort of thing. They are not even respected because they don't have the same age with the person that is marrying them. Whereas it's different for the boys. You find that the boys, you know, will tend to marry later. And then the girls will marry, but they don't marry boys of their own age. They will go into these polygamous relationships with adults or elder men. So we really welcome that, but we feel that in Zimbabwe, I think we need to strengthen the programs that are already existing, that are addressing some of these issues, the issues of poverty, strengthening the education system, development in general.
What can communities and churches do to curb this tradition of child marriage?
I think when you look at communities, yes, there's the role to play. But I still feel that perhaps the need for governments to really look at, like, developing these areas, ensuring that there's development in those areas, that poverty is eradicated. Because at the end of the day, if someone is just at home there and the child comes and tells you that they are pregnant, then the parents sometimes, you know, they don't even understand that there are these laws that protect children. Even some of the traditional leaders may even not respect those laws that are there. So the people need to be made aware of these laws. But at the same time, if there is no development, if there is no support systems for these families and communities, then you find that as much as we may have policies in place, laws in place, they may not help because all these things will just be, you know, swept under the ground and children continue to get married. And it's like a norm, you know, when things are really not what should they should be.
Monica Mandiki is an independent consultant on women's issues. The National AIDS Council is fostering the giving spirit. After donating $1 million to the Basic Education Module Scheme, or BEAM, to help pay school fees for orphans and disadvantaged children, the organization is donating to the National Blood Services of Zimbabwe to ensure they have enough kits to screen donated blood. NAC spokesperson Madeline Dube speaks with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
As National AIDS Council, we are aware that one of our responsibilities or our part of our mandate is to ensure that we prevent the spread of HIV in the country. Therefore, as part of prevention, we ensure that National Blood Services gets support or funding from our National AIDS Trust Fund as a way of ensuring that they have enough blood safety kits to ensure that we do not get transmission of HIV through contaminated blood. Therefore, this year, we have set aside an amount of $206,000, which will be kits bought to National AIDS Blood Services. We have done a handover ceremony. We are in the process of then procuring the blood safety kits. We do not give them money as such, but we then do the procurement on their behalf so that we ensure that the blood safety kits are in country and they have them, and we avert transmission of HIV through blood.
And when do you expect the kits to be bought?
It will be a process which should be concluded in the next 3 months, because we have to have a tender which will be open for 30 days for us to invite the suppliers to give us their quotations. After that, we'll then sit down to adjudicate and then offer the purchase orders to the relevant service providers. And then we then have to wait. So we give it plus or minus 3 months for the process to be completed.
Some would want to know why your organization is helping outside organizations, yet it has people who are in need of the funds that you are donating. May you elaborate here?
Everyone is in need of funds, Mr. Jonga. As you know, funds in country are not adequate for what, or they are not matching the demand which we have. Even though we have to be strategic with the little resources which we have. And one of those strategic partners is National Blood Services of Zimbabwe. Therefore, despite having so many challenges, we feel they are very strategic. They should be assisted even if they are not a paracetamol, because ensuring that we have got safe blood in country also gives confidence to a lot of people who may need blood transfusion to know that they are receiving or they are getting clean blood every time they need those services.
That was National AIDS Council spokesperson Madeleine Dube on the line from Harare with Jonga Kandemiri. Now we go to the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo.
You are now listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues today. I continue my conversation with Hilary Musarurwa, who is the director of the Practical Empowerment Networking Youth Association. Let's recap, as Hilary talked about last week, his experiences in the tertiary education system in South Africa.
For us, our basic education has put us more at an advantage in terms of our performance in tertiary education. And I think this is like sort of like a cord within the tertiary schools, where there is an admittance, although maybe it's not loud enough, that when Zimbabweans come down here in a number of educational institutions, you find them performing in the top 10 percentile of class.
I asked Hilary what are some of the challenges him and his Zimbabwean counterparts face while schooling in South Africa.
Well, our interaction has been one where we look at the level of decay in terms of how the tertiary education now in Zim is sort of like lagging behind with tertiary education in South Africa. I think we're still doing things in Zim more manually, whereas this end, there's a greater emphasis on the usage of the internet, the usage of electronic resources for tertiary education. And this is where I think we sort of like find a little bit of problems in terms of now fitting in, because yes, we are taught something, but it's more of the theory that is done in Zim. And now when it comes to the practical, I mean, it's a bit of a problem. I've interacted with students who have challenges in basic coding, because when they did their undergrad, I think it was looking at the theoretical part of it. Access to computers was more of a challenge. Access to the internet at tertiary level was more of a challenge. Whereas down here, I mean, everything is electronic. You're given reading books electronically.
And of course, rounding up your experience, what do you hope to bring back to Zimbabwe in terms of what you have learned and gained in South Africa?
Well, I think for me, what I'll look at bringing back in Zimbabwe is that adoption of mobile technology, or using mobile technology for the advancement of the inclusion of those who are marginalized. I think the advancement of mobile technology enables us to innovate around businesses or services that can include those who have been marginalized. I think one thing that I'm working towards is making sure that it's not going to be banking as usual. And there's need to really work on models that can enable the youth at the bottom of the pyramid to also be included in access to financial services, enhancing opportunities for the youth from rural areas to also use technology to assist them in either e-learning or just being able to get more information for their farming projects, and hopefully that will enable them to link up with the rest of the world and create opportunities for themselves to earn better money while they're still within a country that's struggling economically.
Hillary, thank you so much as usual for joining me today on the Youth Forum.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hey, what's up? This is Sisi Yanti. Zamba Ujibusha. Iwe ramba uji fire, iwe paga paga breath, zino naga chete.
You're listening to the Youth Forum with Tetenda Gumbo.
This is Tatenda Gumbo, and make sure you join me next time.
Thank you, Tatenda. In sports news, the Zimbabwe Rugby Sevens team has started preparations for the 2015 World Cup qualifiers to be played in Madagascar next month. Team manager Bright Chiwandire says he has called in foreign best players to beef up his team ahead of the qualifiers. Chiwandire spoke with Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye earlier on.
The preparations are underway right now. Our local league is in season, and a lot of our overseas best players are coming to the end of their season as well. So, yeah, in terms of preparation, we've done a lot of work on the ground here back home. All the locally based players have been going to training twice a week, which is like high-performance training with the national coach.
So have you called in any foreign-based players for this Rugby World Cup qualifier? And who are they?
Yes, we have. There's a whole lot of them. Lang, Wolfendale, Passaportis, they're dotted all over the world, as far as the United States of America.
What do you think are your chances at the qualifiers as Zimbabwe?
I must say they look very good. We did very well last year, the same tournament, and we are looking to better our performance of last year this time around. So yeah, our chances are very good. We've got a strong squad going into this competition.
That was the Sebo's rugby team manager, Bright Chiwandire, speaking there with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye from Harare. And if you are a sport fan, a soccer fan rather like me, you would be very interested in counting down the days as we go towards the World Cup. So who do you think is the best striker in African football? Is it Demba Ba, Jevinho, Samuel Eto'o, some may say? Let us know what your 2014 African All-Star football team looks like by selecting the best goalie, the best striker, and the best defender from Africa at our website, www.voazimbabwe.com. Please do vote, because voting ends on June 12th. We'll give you the results after that. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. Now it's time for me to hand you over to Stanekile Mtlanga with the Ndebele Bulletin. But before that, let me recap today's top stories. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says the government should reverse its decision to increase healthcare services as the move will hamper access to healthcare by struggling Zimbabweans. And Zimbabwean Nyaradzai Gumbonjanda is named Goodwill Ambassador for the African Union's campaign seeking to end child marriage on the continent. That's the news in English from Studio 7 this Sunday evening, June 1st, 2014. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Sandekile Mtlanga. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening. Evening, a very good night, and a great week ahead.
Lami ngithathele lithuba lokubonga uSandra. Siyalamukela kuStudio 7 ngesonto mhla ka 1 kuNhlangula 2014. Silethulela uhlelo lwezindaba zeZimbabwe sisakaza sise Washington DC.